Mr. Stan Jarvis, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Jarvis?
Yes, I was born on the 30th of January, 1925, in Walthamstow, London.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background, the sort of family you were born into?
Yes, my father, he worked for the Port of London Authority all his life, and he and my mother brought a family of six children up, or they had the family, but sadly, my mother died 2 days after my second birthday, and as a result, my father was left with six children, which it will be appreciated would be very, very difficult to actually bring up. The oldest child was my sister, who was only 13 at the time. Now, because of that, it was necessary for my father to be relieved of part of the family. So two of the children, myself and my next brother, we were fostered with the National Children's Home, largely in the Essex area, with people with a view to remaining with them until we are capable of returning to the family in London.
Now, were you well treated? Do you remember much about it? I mean, I know you were only sort of two to six or whatever, you know, I mean, do you remember much about the foster homes?
Oh, yes. I don't remember the early ones, but I understand they were in the Saffron Walden and other areas in Essex, which I'm not familiar with. But my first memory, strange it may be, was on my fifth birthday. And that's when I was transferred to a foster parents in Potter Street near Harlow. And it was on my fifth birthday. I have very clear recollections of being brought there by a taxi from a railway station in Harlow and arrived and was presented to Mr. and Mrs. Wheeler, my new foster parents.
And how did they treat you? I mean,
well, the only word I can say is excellent. They were quite humble people. He was a farm labourer and she was a very motherly woman. Sadly, they could have no children of their own. That's why they undertook fostering. And Mrs. Wheeler, by name, she was very kindly, but she obviously was she disciplined me and one or two other children that were being fostered there, but the actual home was comfortable and was indeed kindly.
Did you still see your dad on a regular basis during this 5 or 6 years?
Oh yes, he used to come down by a Green Line coach from London to Potter Street once a month. And he spent a day with me, and but that was really as much as he could spare the time. And it was a fair distance in those days going from London to Potter Street, as you might imagine.
Did you understand what was happening to your family at the time, or did it leave you bitter or in any way upset?
No, not at all. I just accepted it that I had to be fostered. I came from a family, a large family, and I had to be looked after until my father could resume the responsibility.
Now, I believe that happened about 1933 when you went back to live with him in Plaistow.
That's right. In 1933, and now I'm about between eight and a half, I returned to London, but I didn't return to Walthamstow because in the interim, the family home had moved from Walthamstow to Plaistow.
And what do you remember about, I mean, had your dad settled down? I mean, has his circumstances improved? Or?
Well, yes, because five years had gone on, and the family was obviously all 5 years older. And my 13-year-old sister was now an 18-year-old woman, which is now responsible for dealing with the family, and she did extremely successfully. Now, I returned between eight and eight and a half, and I had a great sense of independence. It was cultivated during those years where I realised I wasn't with my correct family, but I really learned to stand on my feet, and that carried me through for the rest of my life.
Now, what about your education? What do you remember of your first schools? I don't know whether that be in Harlow or in Plaistow.
Now, that was in Potter Street, Harlow. It's a little village school and comprised two rooms, and the education was very limited, actually, quite basic. And I continued to say to a lot between eight and a half. I think I lost quite a lot with regard to education during that time. I certainly was left well behind with regard to my contemporaries when I did return to London.
So how did you do it? Which school did you go to in Plaistow?
Well, I went to the infant school, sorry, the junior school in Plaistow, and until the age of 11. That was Holborn Road School. And then, when I was 11, unfortunately, I didn't pass the 11 plus because my education had been quite limited, and it was aggravated by the fact that about 8 to 9 months before that time, unfortunately, I had a very serious accident, fell down the tree in Wanstead Park, broke my arm in three places, and there were 3 weeks. 3 weeks in Whitchurch Hospital with a broken arm. You couldn't imagine such a thing happening these days, but I was. I went home and then resumed schooling again, and a month later I got scarlet fever and had another month in an isolation hospital, all of which did a lot to really prevent my preparation for taking the 11 plus, and therefore I went to a general secondary school in Plaistow until I left school at the age of 14.
Now, how had you done when you got to the generals? Which school was it? Do you remember?
Well, it was Holborn Senior School.
And how did you do there, do you think, during those 2 or 3 years?
Well, again, I began to get a lot of confidence, and I found I was able to do things better than I imagined I could do, despite, the difficult background. And I progressed through the various classes, and I ended the class towards the top of the top class in the school.
Did you have any particularly favourite subjects or that you were good at or bad
History
at?
and essays were the two things. I'd always liked writing stories, and that seemed to come out in the examination results which I obtained.
Now, was there any prospect of staying on at school, or were you bound to leave in 1939 when you were 14 at
Yes,
the...
you were in those days. You were virtually bound to leave school. That's correct, true.
And what were you to do? What job did you get?
Well, employment was quite plentiful at the time, and I was able to get a job within days in a small engineering company.
And what were you doing there?
Well, I was involved in generally assisting the fitters and the turners, because I was only a boy, and also I worked partly in the stores. Obviously, it was quite a humble position at the age of 14, yeah.
And you were doing that from 1939 onwards.
Yeah, 1939 until just shortly after the war started.
Now, what about the outbreak of war? Had you had any idea it was coming? Did you follow? I
Oh,
mean, you were only
yeah.
young, but did you know what was happening?
Oh, only too clearly, because as a 14-year-old in those days, I was quite mature. I was quite aware of what was going on and the possibility of war breaking out.
And what do you remember of the actual outbreak on this?
Well, the 3rd of September 1939, and I remember listening to the Prime Minister announcing we're at war. Within a few minutes of an air raid warning took place, and everyone went into the shelter very, very rapidly. And at that stage, that was the opening of the war, as far as I was
Did
concerned.
you think it would? Did you have any idea how long it would last, how serious it was, that they would actually reach out to take you 4 years later, when you were 18?
Well, no, I didn't imagine it would last that long. I had visions, having read many, many books of the First World War. It probably might last for 2 or 3 years, and it may well be that I wouldn't be old enough to do military service.
Now, what about this shelter? Can we talk about? I presume it was an Anderson
An
shelter.
Anderson
Could you
shelter,
tell
okay.
us a bit about it, how it was installed, and what it looked like, what
Well,
it was like to be in it?
yes, well, as with most families, you had to dig a hole, probably something to the order of about 10 feet by about 8 feet, to actually assemble the metal sections together, and then once it had been completed and it was put into the pits, then you would fill in all around it with earth and right over the top up to the height of about 2 feet. So it was quite protected, certainly from blast of bombs that might fall nearby.
What was it like to be in it for any length of time?
Well, it's difficult to say because we got used to, after the Blitz started in September 1940, we were virtually every night in the shelter for the next 75 days.
I'll come back to perhaps to that then. Yeah. What about the blackout? Can you tell us how your family did the blackout and how seriously it was enforced?
Oh, it was very seriously enforced. All windows were covered, and doors. You had curtains, so if you opened the door, no lights would show. And most people conscientiously, as we did, ensured that the blackout was maintained.
And what was it like when you were actually out on the street? Could you see where you were going? I mean, I don't, you're too young to drive, but I mean...
Oh, no, well, you could, because there weren't a great deal of vehicles about. There were quite a lot of cycles, etc., but there wasn't a great deal of traffic. And as far as I remember, in the dark, you just very quickly accepted that there were no street lamps. It was dark. But incredible as it may seem, you always felt safe. I mean, these days you couldn't imagine doing that, but in those days you accepted the fact no one was going to attack us, and this was maintained really throughout the war.
Now, what about the gas mask? Could you describe the gas mask and whether you had any training in the use of it?
Well, the only training we had was when we were at school from 1938 onwards, and yeah, they were issued at school in separate parts, and you had to connect the filter to the face mask by a very thick rubber band. It was about an inch wide, quite easy to assemble, and then you were shown how to put the harness over your head and so it was comfortable while you were using it.
Now, you didn't actually stay in London long, did you? Because you were sent off to Cindyford in Gloucestershire.
That's
right.
Tell us
about, when was that? What was the circumstances behind that?
Well, shortly after the war started, and I'm talking about a day or two, my family virtually broke up. Because two of my oldest brother and sister, they were married and left the family home. Another brother had gone into the police. And he spent a lot of time away, and he simply left my sister and myself and my father. Now, my sister went to live with my married sister. She looked after her, and it simply left myself. Now, my father had to spend a lot of time in the docks at that stage with the opening of war. There was a lot of arrangements which needed to be made, and he was involved in quite a lot of it. So at that stage, some friends of the family who lived in Cinderford, they spoke to us on the telephone and suggested that I went and stay with them for a while until matters had settled down with the family. We accepted the invitation, so I then went by train to Cinderford and stayed there for the next 10 months.
Can you tell us a bit about this period? How did you settle in with the family friends?
Well, they had a son who was I befriended some years before, and they arranged for me to get a job, actually in Cinderford, which was in an iron foundry. The father, Mr. Weaver by name, he actually worked in the foundry, so was able to get me a job. Again, I was only 14, so it was a fairly humble job, helping in the foundry generally.
Were they on war work, do you know?
Oh yes,
what sort of thing were they on?
Well, they were producing castings related to the railway in the main. That's all I could really say, yes.
Anything happened during this period, or was it...?
No, it was fairly Fairly mundane, because again, my sense of responsibility and independence came to the fore, because I provided for myself from the wage which I earned. My father obviously added to it. I looked after myself. I maintained the rations, that was my entitlement. And in other words, led a quite independent life, but within the family.
So you were there for about
10 months.
10 months. Yes. So you'd come back around about July 1940?
It was right, July 1940. That was when I came back to London, yeah.
And was that to Plaistow?
That's right, back to Plaistow, that's right.
And why then? Why had you returned then?
Well, I think it was really a question that the family had settled down, it was stable, and the conditions at home more or less returned to normal.
So what work did you get this time?
Well, this time I then continued in the same theme. I joined an engineering company, and really I realised at that time it would only be interim work until such time as I went into the forces.
I thought you took a job as an apprentice moulder.
That is correct. That was
an engineering. Was that a formal apprenticeship?
It was a formal apprenticeship. That is perfectly
now,
true.
Can
yeah.
you describe what an apprentice moulder did? Because it's one of those trades that probably aren't much about now.
Well, that's true. In very simple terms, moulding is a question you use patterns of an object which is split in two, or capable of being split in two. The pattern is made of wood, and then you actually make the impression of the pattern in sand, which is packed together very, very tightly. There are two sections of the mould, the upper and the lower part, and once you lift the upper part away from the lower part, you have half the pattern which is still in the sand. You then very gently remove that, and therefore it leaves the impression of the form which you wish to cast. And then you put the two sections together and then pour the molten metal into it. That, in simple terms, is how it is done.
Did you enjoy the work, or did you?
Not particularly. I just realised it was a job I had to do, and I didn't have a particular interest in it, no.
You saw it very much as an interim measure.
That is right.
Until even though it was an apprenticeship, that
absolutely.
Was not going to be your career.
No, it wasn't really, no. I didn't intend that to be eventually, no.
Now, could you tell us about that? One distinctive feature was the German bombing. You moved back to London almost just in time for the bombing to start.
That is true.
And there was quite a big raid on the 7th of September 1940, which I believe affected the dockyard. Could you tell us a bit about that raid, how you saw it and what effects it had?
Well, the actual raid was the 7th of September 1940, and it commenced in the afternoon, where hundreds of German bombers came over. They very, very strongly attacked the docks in particular. The damage was severe and widespread, and the fires were also horrendous. The whole area, viewed from a distance, looked like a sea of fire. It was quite awful to see. And the damage that was caused, not only in the docks, but in the surrounding areas, were very, very extensive. And it's strange, I can remember in Plaistow seeing people walk by in refugee columns, very similar to those which you remember seeing on the continent when the Germans invaded the continent. And it's the only time I've ever seen that in this country.
And where did you see this from? Where were you during the raid? At home or?
I was in Plaistow. Yes.
And was Plaistow bombed at this stage, or was it
only intermittently? In actual fact, yeah, we were something like about a mile or so, maybe 2 miles away from the docks.
Now you were on fire watching parties. Could you tell us, I mean, how you came involved in firewatching?
Well, all civilians were encouraged to undertake firewatching parties, as they called it, which was organised by the local fire brigade. And generally, there were groups of six people that were given equipment like stirrup pumps and long-handled shovels and buckets of sand to deal with incendiary bombs. So if houses were actually caught fire with with incendiary bombs, then the fire party would go in and would deal with it.
Now, how exactly would you deal with an incendiary bomb, you know, if you found one?
Well, if it's up, caught up in the rafters, you had axes and other equipment to chop down a part of the roof or remove the tiles until it landed into in one of the upper floors. And then, if possible, you would then douse it with sand. You would know there's no point in using water because it's magnesium that it wouldn't actually extinguish it.
So the stirrup pumps were more to deal with...
with the fire.
Fires round.
Absolutely, that was caused by an incendiary bomb, more than the incendiary bomb itself.
Would they be lit while you were dealing with them? I mean, would they detonate as soon as they landed?
Yes.
They go off
They did. They had a detonation cap that would cause immediately to ignite. And later on, the Germans used to add an explosive device. And as you were dealing with them, they would explode and spread liquid magnesium all over the place, which was, you know, quite horrendous.
Now, eventually, I mean, how much bombing was... did the bombing build up on Plaistow? Because I know your house was actually hit, or rather... there was bomb damage.
That's
tell
right.
Us what happened?
Well, in early 1941, I would think around about March, April time, there was a severe air raid during the evening, and a stick of bombs actually straddled our home, and one landed in the garden across the road. The first one to fall landed on Tollgate Road School, which was about 200 or 300 yards westward of where we lived. The one which actually landed opposite him really smashed the roof, the windows, blew the doors in, and generally made the house uninhabitable. Now, that particular bomb, which I say it landed in the garden across the road, sadly landed between two Anderson shelters. And you imagine both shelters were smashed quite severely. The occupants of one shelter were killed. The other one, where the blast had actually hadn't gone in that direction, there were two people who actually survived. Other people in the shelter was killed, and I did personally manage to dig out two people, a man and a woman, and they actually survived the bombing and were taken to hospital.
What state were they in? I mean,
awful. They were covered with dirt. They were filthy. Literally had to uncover their faces by hand to get the earth off their faces and realise they were still alive. And at that stage, I was very gently managed to remove what debris I could and then gradually get them out of the shelter.
And were you involved in actually digging out the corpses? I mean, because you were only... 16.
I was 16, yes, at the time. Yes, after the two survivors had been removed and ambulance people took them away, but the rest of the corpses, with the aid of ARP people, I did help to actually get those out, and then they were removed to the local mortuary.
And was that, how bad was that for you? I mean, did it upset you, or were you used to it by then, or...?
Yes, it's fair to say I was quite used to it. Again, this sense of independence and confidence, which had built over the years, held me in very good stead. It didn't upset me. I was saddened, naturally, but that was as far as I could go.
It didn't give you nightmares or that kind of thing?
Nothing, not at all, no.
Now, this led to, I mean, your house, was your house uninhabitable?
It was indeed.
What level of damage had been caused?
Well, the roof had caved in, windows smashed in, the door was thrown across the front room, there were gas leaks, water leaks, it was quite uninhabitable, yes.
So, where did you go then?
Well, very quickly, we were offered alternative accommodation in Ilford, in De Vere Gardens. And that became the family home for several years afterwards.
And that was round about April 1941.
Round about April 1941, that is correct.
So how did you settle down? I mean, did you continue in the same work at Ilford?
Yes, I continued in the same work. until April 1943, when I joined the RAF.
Now,
But
did anything else happen in this sort of period? I mean, I don't want to skip 2 years without,
no,
without
quite.
reference, but I mean, any other incidents from the bombing or from work or anything else that you recall in that period?
Well, I think the most interesting is that in February 1941, I developed an interest in the Air Training Corps. Suddenly, my interest in flying, naturally what one sees in the media, etc., following the Battle of Britain, and I became very, very enthusiastic, and I joined the Air Training Corps on its inception in February 1941.
Now, where did you have to go to
I went to firstly to Ilford Air Training Corps, and then I transferred because other friends of mine belonged to the East Ham Squadron of the Air Training Corps, and there I stayed until I joined the Royal Air Force.
Now, was there any sort of procedure on joining the air training corps? I mean, did they give you an interview or assess you in any way before you joined?
Oh no, you just applied to join, and in the main you're accepted. But in those days, the number of boys in the Air Training Corps was quite considerable, certainly compared to these days. I'm talking about hundreds of them in three squadrons that we had.
And they were there. So you had the Ilford Squadron, the East Ham.
East Ham Squadron, that's just
They were
correct, yeah.
your two main ones,
That's
obviously.
right, but I was only there for a limited time at Ilford, and now I went to East Ham, yes.
Now, where did you meet in Ilford and East Ham?
Well, in Ilford, it was in Cranbrook Road, Ilford. But East Ham, it was in a Victorian-type school known as Napier Road School. It was a multi-storey, old-fashioned school. And we had the two top floors, the Air Training Corps, the schools as it was, and it was very limited, the schooling at that time, they occupied the ground floor.
And what? How often would you go in a week?
I went virtually every day. It was my interests were that intent. I used to come home from work and immediately go to the Air Training Corps. I developed a very deep interest in it, and then very fairly rapidly gained promotion.
I'll come. Hang on. So, what? Tell me what a typical in the early days. What was a typical day's training like? Or not evening's training? I mean, you'd arrive, say, at the East Ham one.
Probably 7 o'clock thereabouts. And then you'd undertake general military training, might be marching, and other military in.
Now, that was your first exposure to drill, I
That
presume.
is correct, yeah.
How did you take to drill? I mean, did you understand it? Did you enjoy it, or did you dislike it? How did you
No, I
feel?
rather liked it actually, because there was a sense of camaraderie. I developed a lot of friends there, and it became a way of life, strange it may seem, because I had no other interest outside home and work, which I obviously did each day.
Did you see the point of drill at the time? Did you understand why you had to do so much of
Oh
it?
yes, I realised that discipline is the beginning of all military background, and I did understand that. But of course, my mind was then developing along the lines that I really wanted to fly.